Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street, a co-working and event space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Learn more at 100bogart.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. The topic? Restaurants and rules. Some rules are based on religion.
This makes for an unusual scene in a Manhattan restaurant. A shy 20-year-old dictating the kitchen standards to a humble veteran chef.
While other rules promote health and safety.
But who are these feared rule keepers with the power to shut a restaurant down?
They're not really like food lovers.
Some restaurant rules fall outside the domain of the kitchen.
All civil rights issues have basically, at one point or another, revolved around the bathroom.
For more, tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I'm Amanda Dell, missing very much my partner in crime on Recommended Reading, Kim. She's not with us today, but we are going to do a great job without her, but we'll be excited to welcome her back in the studio very soon. So again, this is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. Food Book Fair is a food media festival all about writing about eating, and we get to talk to some of our amazing authors and other collaborators and friends of fam in the food world on our show, Recommended Reading. And today we have two extremely special guests joining us. They're looking nervous, but we are going to warm them up very soon. It's very casual. Don't worry. It's just a show about, it's just very nerdy. It's just all about food and books and it's going to be great.
Love that. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So we are joined in the studio today by Yvette Van Boven and her husband, Ulf Versturen. That was the best I've ever done their names,
yeah,
so I won't be doing it again.
That's cool.
and they are coming to us from Amsterdam, so very exciting. And one of Yvette's latest books called Homemade Christmas has been translated into English. And Yvette is a critically acclaimed cookbook author of over 11 books. She's a recipe tester and writer. She's an illustrator. Those are your illustrations, right?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
and she has her own cooking show.
Yeah.
Which I tried to watch. It wasn't translated,
no. But
some of the recipes were. So,
oh.
And then Ulf.
Yeah,
Ulf. Ulf. Is a photographer and collaborates with her on her cookbooks.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so welcome officially to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
It's really, really our pleasure. So usually we start the show by kind of talking about some of our recommended reading, and that can really range from anything. It doesn't have to just be about food. It doesn't have to be reading. It can be watching, listening. So I'll just first share a very quick one, and then we'll get to Ulf and Yvette's. I keep calling you Ulf, but it's Ulf.
It's Ulf.
Okay, I'm
going to
get it. Okay.
Cool.
We're
going
to get to Ulf and Yvette's picks very soon, and I know they're going to be rad. I was just on a trip to Israel, and it's a pretty long flight on the way home, but I slept a little bit, but then I also got into some viewing. I don't know if you've ever flown on Delta. They have an excellent selection of movies, I was happy to discover. So there was this one film called Three Identical Strangers, and it was about an adoption that took place in New York, I think probably in about the 1960s, maybe.
Yeah.
And there was a triplets, all boys, pretty much, identical triplets. Mm-hmm. And they were placed in three different families. And they grew up their whole lives until they were about 18, not knowing that the other two existed, you know.
And this is a true story, right?
Completely true. Oh, documentary. Wow. Story. Sorry. Oh, wow. Yes, exactly. important fact. This is a true life story.
Yeah.
And not only did the adoption... Each of them grew up knowing that they were adopted, but not knowing about the other brothers. And so not only did the adoption agency never tell the families that there were other brothers, they were actually all part of a very calculated study.
Oh, wow. That's creepy.
Yes. Headed up by a psychologist.
Wow.
And they were essentially... The study has never been released in full, but essentially they were trying to understand a little bit more about the idea of nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
They finally had kind of like a study of three identical, quote unquote, people. And so they wanted to place them in different households to see what the result would be and see how strong, someone's nurture and whatever that means is versus nature.
So they were they very aware of where the kids went to?
Extremely. And they were each adopted.
That's actually a bit horrible also.
It was very dark. It was really, really dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got the same dark feeling as The Boys of Brazil. Boys from Brazil, the movie.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
I don't get the exact point anymore because it's so long ago, but that's the same scary experiment in that movie.
Okay. Well, it was really dark. I do recommend it.
We will be flying on with Delta through all of the states.
Okay. Oh, perfect. Up. Delta, sponsor us, please. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. No. I definitely recommend that film. Gives you a lot to think about.
Yeah, that does. Because and on the other hand, it's also quite interesting.
Yeah. And the one really interesting food part was that the triplets actually owned a restaurant in New York called Triplets.
Oh, wow.
That once they discovered each other...
They ended up doing that. Yeah.
They all went into business together in this restaurant called Triplets.
That's fantastic. That's a cool story,
It's since closed, but that also really got me thinking.
Food, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so now that you've heard
your dark side
recommendation... No, I love things that really get you thinking.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and that these things happen in real life. Everything that you can imagine happens.
Yeah, and we've still have so much to learn about this idea of nature versus nurture.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah,
you're not going to tell us how it ended.
Oh, of course not.
No, that'll be a giveaway.
So it's for us to
to explore, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so now I'll turn it over.
To me,
Yvette, of course.
Well, I'm actually, I have so many books I want to read, so I always read two or three at the same time, which is not a good idea, but I do it anyway.
Many people do this.
Yes, because sometimes you feel like one kind of story and sometimes you feel like another. And sometimes, I'm reading a novel.
Okay.
Which is one of the Dutch best novelists we have. And he actually lives in New York. His name is Arnon Grunberg.
Okay.
And he just wrote a new novel. I don't know. He always, from page one, you're into it. And it's fantastic reading. So,
What's the subject matter?
The subject matter right now is, I'm not too sure because I just started into it. But it's about a Polish man. And his life, it's about his life with his wife and his kid, but then in a few pages already you find out that everything is not what you think that it is. Mm. So it goes back with flashbacks into next stories, and well, we have to find out because it's a thick book. I think it's 400 or 500 pages.
Wow.
And I'm only at page 50.
Okay.
But I thought it was the same, it has the same tension as his other books have, and you are pulled into it right away, which I really love. Like really page turning, like so that's nice. And at the other hand, I'm reading a book that's called Ireland's Green Larder, and it's written by Margaret Hickey, and it's an Irish book on it's like a social historic book.
Okay. What's meant by the phrase green pantry?
Larder, yeah. It's meant, well, it is about how the Irish food has evolved until now.
Okay.
And it's written really well, I think, and it's fun to read. It's a history book.
Oh, wow.
But it's fun to read. It's not, like, really heavy, but it does tell us a lot about the whole Irish history and how every ingredient came into their diet, which is actually really interesting to read. I think it will be interesting to read for every country, but it's very interesting to read how grains came into their diet or how they, you know, came into, well, you know, everything. And then in every single part of the country and everything that happened around there. So I find that very interesting.
And you were born in Ireland.
I was born in Ireland, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm from Dutch parents, so I'm not Irish originally. Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe we'll get into that a little later. I was very intrigued by that.
And yeah, it's a good read, yeah.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Okay, oof.
I did it right. Oh, yeah. Sorry, there we go. You got it right. No, I'm reading, I'm a slow reader.
Okay.
No, because it's so relaxing and I always fall asleep after like half a chapter.
Right.
So, I mean, I make the books pretty worth their while. By the time I finish it, it's got, you know, all the wrinkled pages and stuff. But we did a trip to Japan early this year, which was fantastic. Like a super sort of center of the country, round trip from Osaka to the countryside, Kyoto and Tokyo. And it was brilliant. So when we got back, I got a friend to lend me his book. It's called Hokkaido Highway Blues, and it's a travelogue from a guy that starts in the south of it. He's a Canadian writer, and he starts in the south of the country, and then he travels along hitchhiking the Sakura period. So he goes where the cherry blossoms is, and so he starts in early spring, starts in the south, and then he goes along with the Sakura, the cherry blossom, all the way up north. And it's funny. It's very.
What time?
He starts in I think March in the south, and then it sort of travels up week by week all the way to that will be end of April.
Okay, and but is it in modern times?
I think it's a couple of years ago. It's not a very new novel, but it's from, 2015 or so. It's not that old.
Sounds good.
And it's modern times, and it's
it's supposed to be really funny because it's always
laughing. Really? when a book makes you laugh out loud, wow!
It's pretty funny. Because
really?
He's not mocking the Japanese. He's a tall guy like me. He's a very, very not Asian. He's like a tall Canadian dude. And he's all this awkwardness from himself, but also the interaction with people that have a very modern but different culture. And it's just very funny.
Yeah.
It's a very good read.
Very recognizable also.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For a European guy going over to Japan, and I mean, you fit in, but not as in New York. I mean, as a European person, you would fit in New York pretty easily.
Definitely.
Because you more or less speak the language and the way to go about and to find your way and to speak to people, it's quite easy. In Japan, it's a whole different story. Especially outside of the city. So all these awkward moments, it's a fantastic book.
And the title,
Hokkaido is the most northern Ireland.
Okay.
Hokkaido Highway Blues.
Highway Blues,
yeah.
Okay. Hokkaido Highway Blues.
Called Will Ferguson.
Fun.
The author. Yeah, it's cool.
I need to put that on my list.
But it's a very funny book.
Yeah, Japan is second on my list of places that I want to travel.
Do it, because it's fantastic.
It's amazing.
It's the best food ever. And
wow.
People are cool. They're interested and very, very friendly. At least that's what we get from them, because you don't know. It's cool to be in a country where you can't read anything, or and traditions and the way to go about is really different from what you're used to. But it's so modern, especially in the cities, that it's it feels very interesting and cool.
Gotta do it.
Yeah, do so.
Yeah. It's on my list. I'm dying to go to Mexico City, and then
very good, I think.
Yeah.
That's on our list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you both travel a lot, and that also, I'm sure, informs both of your work, traveling.
Yes, of course it does.
Yes. Well, it brings us here. So.
Yeah, definitely. So, we're here to talk about Homemade Christmas, which I had the pleasure of getting to read over the past couple of days. Mm. When it kind of came to my house, I kind of looked at it and I was like, wow, it's really beautiful. I almost didn't know how to think about it because I don't celebrate Christmas really. And as soon as I started looking through it, I was really impressed and I really felt like the recipes were something that I would want to make.
Oh, really?
And so, Thank you. So first, congratulations are in order.
Thank you.
Because I know how much work goes into making a book.
Yeah.
And so, as I understand a little from our short conversation before this show, certain books are translated to English and certain ones that you have are not. Is that, or have they all been translated into English?
Well, the major books have.
They have. Okay.
Yeah.
And so this is the latest one that has been translated into English.
Yeah. Yes, okay. It's still warm from the press. Yeah.
Oh, that's very Christmas appropriate.
Handout.
Okay, that's
we take care of it.
Yeah, now that's everyone is going to get a warm book under their Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Straight from you. That's our promise. Yeah. If you order this book, it will arrive warm for Christmas.
Yeah, promise.
So the first question I actually had after looking at some of your other books online, what I could see is this idea of homemade.
Yeah.
And calling this series Homemade.
Yeah.
Does that translate? Is that an English translation? Is it called the same?
It does. Yeah. Well, it does. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, to be very precise, this book.
Yeah.
To make it sort of general and easy, they're called the Homemade series to make it sort of like a constant series.
Right.
In Holland, it's called Home Sweet Home Christmas. Yeah. So that's the exact same book, just a different
home
cover.
Home Sweet Home. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is my first question really is, what does homemade or home sweet home mean to you? And what do you hope it means for other people?
Well, it's quite a nice, quite a complex question, actually.
Good.
Because, homemade, it's an English word. And for you, it's just a word that you know. For us in Holland, it sounds like if something is homemade, you really want to eat it. It's like, like apple pie, and you know, you feel like somebody has really taken care of you. If you translate it into Dutch, it sounds like you try to make it, but it didn't really work out. You know what I mean? So it has a little different. It's just a slightly different meaning. I find.
So that's interesting because I think also in the U.S. we associate homemade with the process and not so much with kind of the result.
Yeah.
Like it's homemade meaning. I think that makes people want to think about actually cooking it in their home.
Yeah.
As opposed to what happens like after it's made.
Yes.
So
and it is an interesting thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because my first book was called Homemade.
Okay. And, just Homemade.
Just Homemade.
Okay.
And so that's hence the whole series after that. But the first book was called Homemade, and I focused on making everything yourself. So this is something I have always done before. And I was brought up making everything ourselves. We made our own toys. We were even discussing watching kids on the street today, and they were wearing all these costumes. And and we said, well, our parents would never have bought costumes. My parents would always have said, you have to make your costume yourself. Here's a piece of material, and here's a pair of scissors. So, and I'm very much, I think it's the same as with us in Europe, is that there are so many manufacturers that make all these packets of pre-made sauces and things. And I'm so averse to that. And I think that everything you make home, you make by yourself is so easy, and you don't have to buy tomato sauce. You can just make tomato sauce. So that's how I started the first book off. And all my recipes, everything is always made from scratch. But it's not very hard. That's what I'm trying to show. So it is actually about the process also.
Yeah, but also I think, and especially maybe in Holland, the homemade label, mostly for food, would be also a quality label. Yeah. I mean, okay. In general, if you put your love and attention to it, mm-hmm. it should be better than store-bought. You know, if it's like a homemade pie, that's what you come home for. Other than a store-bought pie, which can be good, but you know,
yeah.
It's if you do your own jams or with the nice little labels on it, it gets this sort of extra special mom food or something. I don't know. It's just stuff that you come home for, and still, you know, it's simple, but it's to cook for yourself or for your friends or your family. It's just, it makes it easy.
Yeah, I love cooking, so it's mm-hmm. something that I can definitely relate to. It's funny that you mentioned jam. A friend, wonderful author and now Netflix show star, Samin Nosrat.
Yes.
She came to town and she actually gifted me some jam. It's apricot jam. And I was like, oh, this is so lovely. I tasted it and like my socks were blown off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like one of the best things I've ever tasted. And I've never really been that interested in making jams or preserve. I make my own pickles, but kind of preserving in that way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I've got to make this. Like was just reaffirmed that how good something relatively simple can be when you take
also,
the time
I think,
to make
it. Yeah, but it also sounds really tacky when I say this, but I really believe that if you make something with love by yourself, you can actually taste it back. I know it sounds horrible, but I really do think that it's, if you've made, you know, food from pre-manufactured food can be, it's just made without love. It's just made, it's made with, for different reasons.
Yeah.
There's the Christmas spirit.
Exactly.
Oh yeah.
we're definitely going to get into talking more about Christmas. We have to take a very short break, and then we will be right back with Yvette and Oof.
Bogart has made much progress over the past year since their grand opening. They are a growing community of professional freelancers, entrepreneurs, and startups. Their dedicated team guarantees you receive a productive and worry-free work environment. 100 Bogart is currently filling up their 2-person to 12-person private offices. The spacious pop-up gallery, premier rooftop, and brand new full floor with terrace are available for your next event. Podcast rooms, conference rooms, and meeting spaces are also available for booking. 100 Bogart hosts events like art exhibitions, pop-up stores, product launches, and fashion shows. Heritage Radio Network is a proud member of the 100 Bogart community and often holds events in the building. Visit 100bogart.com to schedule a tour and learn more.
Hello, welcome back. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I'm your host today, Amanda Dell, and we are joined in the studio today with author Yvette Van Boven and her husband and collaborator on their books and most recent book, Homemade Christmas, Oof Verschloren. Yes, I am finally getting to a good place with the names, and I am extremely proud of myself. So I will just take a moment to pat myself on the back.
It is a hard name, though.
Yes, give me credit.
Oh, yeah. You're doing great.
Yes, so they are joining us from Amsterdam, where they live, and Yvette hosts her own cooking show. She's the author of over 11 books. She's a recipe tester. She's an illustrator. And we are here to chat about and celebrate their brand new book, Homemade Christmas. So again, congratulations.
Thank you.
And the book has an amazing combination of photography,
Thanks to Oof. And
you.
Also illustrations from Yvette and beautiful recipes. And you also shared family photos, older photos. And
yes, a bit, yeah.
Okay. I loved that. We'll get into that definitely in a minute. So really when I was starting to look at this book, it got me thinking again about Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means to me, but what it means, you know, to other people. And so Yvette said the best thing when we were chatting about the book. She says, I'm not really the Mariah Carey kind of Christmas person. And so when I wanted to do this Christmas book, I, you know, you said that you were thinking about, you know, how you wanted to do it in your own way.
Yeah.
And yeah. I just, that description made me really laugh out loud.
But I think that everybody knows what I mean by that.
Yeah, but yeah. Elaborate a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not that kind of person who's, we're not a religious, and I don't look at Christmas like, oh, we're decorating trees and reindeers and singing carols all day. But I do like, I'm very happy that we have a nice family. So I love when they come over, and I like that we all participate in cooking. Everybody's fighting over doing every dish. So we always share the cooking together. And so it's, for me, it's one of the nicest times of the year right. You know, in that aspect. I write for a lot of magazines and newspapers in Holland, and I've noticed that people really freak out when it's about when it's about Christmas dinners,
right.
And they don't freak out for birthday parties but Christmas is a very stressful thing. And so I've been writing a lot of Christmas recipes, trying to avoid doing too much at the end, and you know that you can prepare things for easily. I've been writing loads and loads of anti-stress tips and things, thinking of things to get you settled down and quiet and peaceful and happy about inviting so many people over. And so I've actually decided to put it into a book, because I was, you know, I wouldn't say fed up, but I was like thinking of, well, I'm going to write a book, so you don't have to freak out anymore. You can just look in the book and just feel at ease. I've even put in some Christmas menus at the end for vegetarians, or for elaborate parties, or for big buffets, or for tiny little dinners together. So you don't even have to think about that either.
Right.
So that was my whole idea. And actually, it's about winter dinners. It's not so summer focused in aspect of the of the ingredients.
Right.
But I could have named it like feasts or
family
dinner parties,
right.
Or family,
right.
Parties.
I mean, you can apply the book to any sort of festive moment,
yeah.
More or less on the wintry side of the season,
yeah.
But it could be for Thanksgiving or
yeah.
Maybe even this time of year, for all family parties, or it will take the stress out of organizing a dinner party for over six people.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think writing menus for winter is more challenging. You know, in summer, there's much more to choose from in a way. And many of the ingredients, you know, can really just be served raw with very little.
You can just slice up some tomatoes and you're. Yeah.
So I think this is a really, really very helpful to understand how to, you know, use ingredients that can be found, you know, primarily in the winter, and make them just as exciting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Interesting.
True.
And
yeah.
You know, cozy. I think in a way people are inclined more to cook kind of during the colder months.
Yeah, you can have the oven on.
Exactly. You can have the oven on.
You can have the oven on, and I use an oven for everything. I think that's the most practical thing that you can have, because you can have your hands free after that, so that's fine.
Yeah.
And also it's challenging to think of recipes that don't involve kale or pumpkin or root vegetables all the time. There are other vegetables too, so it's nice to make
and you have some drink recipes in here too.
Of course
we do.
I love, you know, the one I really want to make, I margaritas are like my favorite drink.
Oh,
and then I saw
one.
The cranberry,
yeah,
and I was like, wow,
yeah,
I
have never tried this. I have to.
Do. I should have brought you one.
Oh, later.
And
later.
I've even made it easier to, you know, to make
to do it, in a batch.
Yeah, a big batch, because you need to do everything big batches in on holidays. Yeah.
Yeah. People are definitely going to knock back a margarita or two. That's for sure. So you grew up or were born in Ireland to Dutch parents?
Yes.
Okay. And how long did you live in Ireland?
10 years.
Okay. Wow. So has that informed any of your recipes to this day, or any practices even around holidays, or ways that you think about ingredients?
Absolutely. I grew up with Christmas, but in Holland, Christmas is now getting to be a bigger feast. We have St. Nicholas at the beginning of December.
Okay.
And it's like Santa Claus, but then almost the same person. I don't know, somewhere it got torn into two people. But so for me, I grew up with Christmas and an Irish food, basically. But my mum would mix it in with Dutch food a little
bit. Wow, interesting. Yeah. Do you remember any of like the combinations or any ingredients that maybe...
There are funny things that are really, really Dutch, like chocolate sprinkles, for instance. And
like what we think of as sprinkles.
What you would think of as sprinkles. That you
on
would,
ice cream.
That we you would put on ice sandwich. Cream or on cakes. We eat that on sandwiches every morning. So that is a...
Oh, the kids in America would love that.
I know, I know.
Let me tell you. The parents would...
Them in big boxes and you have all the different kinds of chocolate. Yes, yeah, yeah. And that's very Dutch. And I remember my mom...
Fascinating.
Looking at in the supermarkets... You know,
in Ireland.
In Ireland, okay. Yeah. And she was really searching for these chocolate sprinkles because she was brought up that way, like having a sandwich... with chocolate sprinkles and butter in the morning. So she bought these little, what size is this? Really tiny.
Like a couple ounces.
Yeah, a couple of ounces of chocolate sprinkle. You could only buy them in tiny things. So I can remember she was giving it to us like, okay, this is a tiny little Dutch moment. We're allowed to pour on like, there's only 2 tablespoons of chocolate sprinkles on our sandwiches. So that's how we learned about Dutch culture. And of course, when we moved back, I was only 10 years old, so I got the whole Dutch experience.
You had plenty
too.
Of sprinkles.
Yeah. We had plenty of sprinkles, yeah. So it's funny. Yeah, there are funny things. But I find that my cooking is a bit more English or Irish inspired than most of the Dutch food writers are. Yeah, obviously, because it's the way that you are being brought up. Yeah,
and it's such an interesting melding of
it is actually
two
it
places.
Is. Yeah.
Then again, they have Irish fare and Dutch food it's not that far apart. Is
okay.
it?
No, I mean,
it's very simple, very sort of potato driven. Mash and stuff, quite simple, not very elegant, very tasty though, but not super elegant. The old fashioned stuff, like we visit Ireland a lot, and there's a food scene going on which is very, very sort of modern and
interesting, right?
Yeah. Very interesting, yeah. and produce driven mostly because they've got super, super nice stuff there. And
it's incredible. Also,
yeah. There's just so much farmland and fantastic seas with clear water, and it's ridiculous. And I'm not the expert, but we're very interested. So we noticed that Irish chefs are picking up on their own produce and making fantastic food, very accessible to people with the same sort of not very distinguished food history as the Dutch have.
Yeah.
So it's they're doing really well as the Dutch. I mean, our restaurant scene in the bigger cities is very up to
high standards.
We're doing well.
Yeah.
I gotta get over there.
Yeah, you should. It's good fun. It's good eating. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to dive a little bit more into the book because I thought it was just such a clever combination of the illustrations, the recipes, the photographs. I wanted to talk a little bit about the styling because I know that that's
that's
that was something
one.
That you both. You know, collaborated on.
Yes,
is that true?
We do. Okay. Yeah, okay. We do it all together.
Yes.
Yeah.
And. I look at a lot of cookbooks. It's a privilege. Like I love them.
Lucky
but I've seen many. And I think this, you know, some of the images that I really loved were the most simple ones. Mm. And I think that you've done a really great job of capturing that. And I want to talk about kind of the process of styling, because mm-hmm. I've recently in another project that I've been doing dabbled a little bit in kind of understanding how to create a set, how to make food look good, but also how to make the setting look good. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult.
Yes, it is.
And so do you search for your own props?
Yeah.
Do you talk to us a little bit about that process?
Yeah, sure. It's very organic. I mean,
it's
a couple.
Okay.
Yeah. Not only for work, but in life. And so it's once the project is there, and Yvette sort of, she always comes up with the general idea. So she wants to make a book about this and this.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of, becomes a part of our life, because it takes like a couple of months or a year to get this book together.
Yeah.
And at first it sort of is like comes in Yvette's mind, and then it organically.
I show some pictures. It could be like a picture I saw in a museum, or it can be anything, a painting or something.
Okay, a so reference.
We use it as a reference, and then I show it to Ulf, and then I know instantly it starts bubbling in his head. I could see it happen. And then he makes some test shots, and they're like, yes, that's what we mean. That's what I mean. Yeah. So that's
okay.
Yeah.
So you prepare the food that you then have to shoot.
Yeah.
You know, all of the shots. And then do you do your own props as well?
Yeah. Like, it's mostly stuff that we just have in the kitchen or at home.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, the whole idea is home cooking. So it's great to do it through a couple of months and just actually do the testing on the recipes and eat it ourselves, and shooting it while we're making it.
Yeah.
And so all the point of views of the pictures are different, because it's not done in like 2 or 3 days and then shoot all the recipes in a series.
Because that is okay. Oh, okay. That's
no. We're taking like development of the book goes along with the photography. So it will also mean that we shoot throughout like a bunch a month. It takes an hour, a year or more.
Yeah,
that is interesting, because obviously you share a home and your collaboration process is different. But many cookbooks they are cramming, you know, and they're like they're shooting everything in a week.
Yeah,
200
exactly.
photos.
Yeah.
Okay, so wow, so that you go kind of recipe by recipe.
We go more or less page by page.
Yeah.
We start at page one and then sort of work our way. Well, not literally, but, you know, we started
And I designed the book myself. Yeah. So I have this whole thing made up in InDesign, where I just upload every picture. And then I decide we need more this picture here, we need more that picture there. And that's why I also do all the little drawings. Mm-hmm. So
They're not that little, they're beautiful.
Well, smaller ones or big ones. And sometimes I find there's a little bit of space left here. I should draw something there or something. So it's very organic how we work. And we've been eating a lot of Christmas dinners and Easter.
Yeah.
Right.
We invited the whole family over. We said, it's Christmas, guys. So we had all the bigger, we had to do all these elaborate dishes. And for lots of people, we can't eat it all by ourselves. So, yeah.
So interesting. And then, you know, I earmarked this page because there's a beautiful, cool photo of different Christmas records.
That's
but
actually another story.
The
I can
one,
tell a nice story.
Not maybe some that you haven't seen before.
It's so cool, isn't it?
I was, you know, leafing through, and I was like, oh, this is so beautiful. This, I want to make this. And then I was like, oh, this is fun. Look at these Christmas records.
Yeah, and it is fun. And it's actually a nice story. We have a neighbor, and he is a fanatic about records. He's also a music journalist.
Okay.
And he has, his house is a museum. And it has only records, and CDs and records and more. So I asked him, do you have any Christmas records? Just asking. So the next day he came with this huge pile, and we have been playing these records also during the cooking to get into the mood.
Really? Oh my god, I'm just this is like an amazing scene I'm envisioning right now. Yeah, you two jamming to the Christmas records. I love that.
Yeah, so that was his and then we had to give them back to him for his whole collection. Yeah. But we did shoot them for them because it was nice, and it's this is also we tried not to be too obvious in the styling of the we do have some Christmassy styling in right. the book, but it's not too obvious, and we found that these kind of pictures also are about Christmas as much as a tree and snow and all those kind of things. So, yeah.
Well, I love flipping through and yeah. finding that. It was really great. Well, the other thing that I really enjoyed about the book was the positivity and kind of the self-affirming tidbits that you gave to the reader.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them were like, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
You can do it. And I just wondered, you know, where that came from, that voice. And I know you spoke about, you know, the nervousness that comes,
yeah.
You know, that you've experienced writing for, you know, various columns and magazines that is associated with like Christmas. Yeah. It's like dun dun dun.
Don't freak out.
You know, and I kind of love that because it brought a little humor to the book and just being like, yes, like I want to make good food, but it's not so serious.
No, exactly. And and I also think that you shouldn't be too nervous about it. If you can't cook that well, just ask other people to help.
Okay.
And just remember that it's just about having a good time and having your friends over and enjoying their friends there. They're waving. See, hi. Having friends over and enjoying good food together. So that's the main point.
Yeah. And you put things in like fried pickles. I was surprised to find that. Okay.
Have you ever tried that?
No.
You said you pickled yourself.
I've made pickles. Yes. Okay. Like pickled. I've done like pickled string beans and like I've made pickled onions all the time and things like that. Okay. I thought I'd try
them in a batter and then fry them up and you'll.
It's delicious. It's the best beer food ever.
Okay, I gotta try that.
Yeah, he gobbled it.
They're really, really nice.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we just have a minute or two, so maybe what I would love to have you both leave us with is think about what you would have as your like sample menu. Like if someone is thinking about getting this book or thinking about their Christmas menu, like maybe just pulling out some of your favorite things, like start with like, what would the drink be? Maybe the appetizer, like what would you like, let's pull together a pretend Christmas menu right now.
Well, I'm not a vegetarian person, but I do tend to eat not so much meat.
Okay.
I think that's a better thing for everyone and for the planet. So I have tried to highlight a lot of vegetarian dishes or to just, you know, to make it easier for people to make that choice. There are some dishes with fish or meat, but I have tried to be more vegetarian kind of. So we'll start off with the margaritas.
Oh my god, I'm dying to make. I actually have a question about it. So you said, is it the cranberry juice, like the unsweetened one that you use, or the
I use unsweetened, but it's
tart. It's
quite tart. Okay. Yeah, but I, you know, margaritas are sour kind
yes.
of.
Yes, yeah. I'm gonna try. I'm dying to try this.
You should try it. Yeah,
it looks so good.
So and then there is a goat cheese like gratin. Kind of and it's with pepper juice. It's like sweet
pepperdew peppers.
Yes, and it's like sweet and spicy at the same time.
Okay,
and you mix it all up and then you put it into the oven and it gets like hot and boiling and then you make your own little toast and you dip it in. So that's very nice.
A hot cheese. Okay.
Yeah, hot cheese. That's good. And then
that sounds very festive.
One of my favorite dishes, and it looks very chefy and restauranty, but it's not. It's beetroot, all different colors, and you just put them in the oven for a long time and then just forget about them and take them out again. Slice them up very thinly and make like a carpaccio of all these different colored slices. And
of then roasted
beets. Okay. And then you make a smoked curd which also sounds really like wow, but it's not. It's so easy. And making a little smoker oven is very easy, and I've written it down in the book. So you can do that in 5 or 6 minutes. So it's really, really easy. And then you put that on top and you puff up some buckwheat. So this sounds like it's very hard, but it's not. It's okay. So easy, and it looks so pretty, and it's super delicious. So I would make that. Okay. And there are a couple of vegetarian options. I've done a whole roasted cauliflower with a cream, like a goat cheese, cream cheese kind of sauce. And there are a couple of those kinds of dishes, which I like. I like roasting whole pieces of cabbage. There's one with a fish sauce and butter, brown butter thing. And it's cooked straight from the pan, and it's really delicious, I find. Brown butter on everything.
Yeah. That's why I'm so skinny.
Yeah. And maybe the syllabub as a dessert.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't know that. I didn't. What is that? I didn't.
That is a. It's actually a very old fashioned English dessert. It's
called syllabub?
Syllabub.
Okay.
Yeah, and it used to be, well, it's from the 18th century.
Oh, wow.
But it's actually really delicious, and it's about some cream and yogurt. Well, you actually steep some brandy, some lemon, and some nutmeg and some spices overnight in the fridge. And then at the last moment, you would
whip it into
cream with some yogurt for the tartness. And then you would toast some granola or something, or some oatmeal, or just like crispy toasted oatmeal at the bottom, and you would pour the mousse on top, and it's amazingly good.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's you can just make little glasses, so it's very easy.
Ah,
and
individual ones.
Yeah,
I
individual
see.
Ones, okay. And it's not too heavy, so it's quite good. Yeah, and it's one of my favorite pictures in the book too.
I'll have to look at that.
Yeah.
Well. Short of coming to Yvette and Oof's house for Christmas, you know, the second best, I think, would probably be to make it yourself.
Yeah.
But which I look forward to doing.
I think
that I'm going to maybe start my own Christmas tradition this year of some people floating around New York who don't have a place to go.
Well, you have the menu right there.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This was incredibly informative and so fun to see a dynamic duo working together. Our pleasure. And so Homemade Christmas is available online in your favorite bookstore in your neighborhood. Go support independent bookstores.
Yes,
do so.
Yeah. And you can also find Yvette online. Sometimes translated to English, sometimes not. But I got a lot from your show, the cooking show.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Thank you.
So again, thank you so much for joining us, and be sure you pick up the book. This is Amanda signing off for Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, and we will catch you next time.
Recommended Reading is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money.
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos.
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.